Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.
How dare you?
Well, good morning and welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And hoping your day is going well. How you doing? You doing all right? I hope so. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate the fact that you do listen, that you've subscribed to the podcast, or that you join us for Facebook Live each morning at 8 o'clock Central. If you'd like to find that, that's simple. Just look for The Daily Perspective on Facebook and actually join up, follow it, and you'll get little notices as we go live in the morning. And the podcast feed goes live about 5 minutes, roughly 5 minutes before we actually hit the start of the show. And there's a little music playing, Christmas music right now. And when it hits the top of the hour, bang, everything gets rolling with what you're hearing right now. So if you're a podcast listener and you want to join in live, sometimes on the live feed, there's stuff to look at. Yeah. No, I will. Trust me, I am not one of these guys who puts a camera on himself and then talks to the camera. I just don't do that. I'm a radio guy. I've been in radio, in and out of radio, for most of my adult life. And cameras are for people who want to be on TV. I'm not one of those people. But from time to time, like if you're watching the feed right now, you see the Democrats. See? There you go. At least that's what I think. Anyway, it's a good day to be in the neighborhood. We've got where I live in the sunny Southland. We're talking about snow today. Yeah, we really are. There's more of the state than we thought is going to get some snow, possibly up to an inch of accumulation on grassy areas, which means Piggly Wiggly is already out of milk and bread. And Winn-Dixie and the rest of them, they're all out of milk and bread. There's none to be found anywhere because everybody's already in a panic about today. But, you know, how this works, it's either going to do nothing or we're all going to be in deep, deep trouble. One of the two. It's but as I said yesterday, for my friends who live up north, we don't have snow here. We have a threat of snow. And we don't have feet of snow like you do. We have inches. But anything over about half an inch just locks us up. We just can't do anything. So today could be an interesting day in my neighborhood. Remains to be seen. I have things to do today. I know you have things to do today. Yesterday I was out for another studio session. I'm out again for another studio session outside of my studio. And I'm doing some editing on that yesterday's session when we get through here today to finalize, to upload, to release tonight. And then to this afternoon, recording us a podcast for Dawson Now, which will air or release next week. And staying busy, 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 busy. And let's see, what else is there? Oh, yeah. I'm scanning through things this morning, as is my habit usually. And I'm in front of the TV. I've got my coffee. Kimber the Wonder Dog is warming my lap. I've got my iPad. And I'm scanning news stories to see if anything has changed since I put things to bed late yesterday. And a little bit has, not much. And I hear a phone ringing. It's not mine. Mine's right there. It's not my phone. It's my wife's phone. She's calling it from work because she has left it at home. And nowadays, we live in an environment where if we don't have our cell phones with us, we feel naked. We feel vulnerable. Something is just not right. And I think in a way that's interesting, and in a way that's sad, because there was a time where if you were traveling and you needed to use the phone, you had to pull off the road someplace and find a payphone. Drop quarters, at one time dimes, at one time nickels. You would drop change in the slot and dial the number and see what was going on. After that, we had pagers. I don't know if you remember the day of pagers, but we had pagers, and some of us had voice pagers. And then, you know, the little digital pagers, they got smaller and smaller, and you would pull them off and look at the number and call the number back. And some of them had full readouts where they would send you a text message to it was a device that was just dedicated to messages and phone numbers that hung on your belt. Some of you who are too young to remember that are looking at me like, what? Yeah, well, that's the way it was. And one day, someday, I will have to tell you about a prank which involves a voice pager. That day will not be today. And then we got, I don't know if you remember the Motorola brick phone. If you're old enough to remember the Motorola brick phone, it's good to have you in the club. If not, just go back and scan old X-Files episodes. And there's one, I can't remember the name of it, but there's an episode where Fox Mulder met the lone gunman. Gunmen, plural. There were three of them. The lone gunman. He met these guys, conspiracy nuts. He met them for the very first time. It was a flashback episode. And Mulder was notorious for his reaching into his pocket and pulling out his cell phone. He was always getting cell phones about this or cell calls about this or that. And his, you hear the ringing of a phone. He reaches into his pocket of his trench coat that he always wore when he was out running around. And lo and behold, he pulls out the brick phone. And everybody watching just rolled over and laughed. It was funny. Trust me, it was, if you followed the show. There was the brick phone, and then they got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And then they started getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger again. So now we have cell phones that are the size of small tablets, and they do everything that more than the space shuttle computers could do. Anyway, that's where we are now. But now we have them with us all the time, and when we leave one at home, we just don't know how to do. Life just won't function. Something's wrong. I need my phone. What could you? So I get this phone call. Can you bring my phone when you get out today? So, yeah. Okay, fine. So one of the things I'll be doing today, besides going by UPS and going down to the Dawson Now Studios, is swinging by my wife's place of employment to drop off her cell phone so she can stop her withdrawals. And that's just what my day is shaping up to be like. How about yours? As is usual, before we hit the first break, I like to look into some absurdity if I possibly can. And what I'm about to share with you is not necessarily absurd, but it does illustrate a certain kind of absurdity. He said, voice cracking, a certain kind of absurdity that we have in our society today. And that is people who are in the entertainment business being taken seriously about their opinions. I think that's absurd. I think it's absolutely absurd. And I've said so several times. I agree with Laura Ingraham, who wrote the book, Shut Up and Sing, because she was talking about singers pontificating from the stage at concerts. Now just shut up and sing, you know? We didn't pay all this money to come listen to you tell us your crackpot theories about the world. Just shut up and sing. Listen, wasn't there recently an article in Rolling Stone about how much dope you smoke? You've been cooking your brain with that stuff, and you expect us to trust your opinions? Well, the same kind of goes for people who are in the profession of acting. And it's refreshing when from time to time someone who is a recognized member of the acting profession steps up and says, don't ask me, which is exactly what Academy Award winner Anthony Hopkins did. He has no desire to share his politics, and he concedes that, well, I'll get into that in a moment. The story coming to us from the Daily Wire, written by Paul Bois. Speaking with Brad Pitt for Interview Magazine, Anthony Hopkins said he often declines the opportunity to share his opinion about the movie industry or world events because it's, quote, not worth anything. He says, I don't have any opinions. Actors are pretty stupid. My opinion is not worth anything. There's no controversy for me, so don't engage me in it because I'm not going to participate. Hopkins added he rarely goes to movies anymore and dislikes what he called green screen movies, though he did appreciate Brad Pitt's turn in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He said, I'm not great at going to see the green screen films. I've been in a few of them and they're fun, but they don't grab me. I'm a bit too old for that. When he says green screen films, what he's talking about is the ones that have all the computer generated stuff, the Lord of the Rings movies and the Avengers movies and the like, those movies The actors are in costume and there are some set pieces around them, but the majority of what you see is digitally added because they're in a studio with a giant green screen behind them and the computers just subtract the green and add the stuff you want to see. Anyway, Hopkins' dismissal of talking politics echoes what actor Mark Wahlberg stated just a couple of years ago in 2017 following President Trump's election, in which he said celebrities should stay out of politics. Quote, you know, it just goes to show you that people aren't listening to that anyway. They might buy your CD or watch your movie, but You don't put food on their table. You don't pay their bills. A lot of Hollywood is living in a bubble. They're pretty much out of touch with the common person, the everyday guy out there providing for their family. Look, I've never gone and talked about politics. I'm an actor. Both Republicans and Democrats buy movie tickets. I had a strong opinion, and I didn't choose to voice it out in the public. But now that somebody is in office, let's all just come together and rally around him and make sure he has the best chance to succeed. For better or worse, this is our country. At least for the next 3.5 years, he's going to be making a lot of decisions. So let's get out there and try to make a positive change. Wahlberg even went as far as to say he would share a burger with President Trump if given the opportunity. He said, I've shared a golf course with him, so I'd certainly share a burger with him, he said. By the way, just as a side note, in case you didn't know, Mark Wahlberg and his brother Donnie, the brothers, I think there are three of them, they own a chain of burger restaurants called Wahlburgers. Just write that down where you write things on a small child or the family pet. In 2016, following the election of President Donald Trump, actress Nicole Kidman also said that the country should support him as opposed to hating him. Quote, Trump is now elected and we as a country need to support whoever is the president. She told this to UK television host Victoria Derbyshire at the time. She goes on to say, that's what the country's based on, and however that happened, it happened, and let's go. Comedian Kevin Hart also said in 2017 that he prefers to be a bright spot, the bright spot in this culture, rather than divisive with politics. He said, when you jump into that political realm, you're alienating some of your audience. The world today, it's really not a laughing matter. It's serious. I don't want to draw attention to things I don't have nice things to say about. So there are a few people with a little grain of wisdom who are still in Hollywood who are working in the entertainment business, and that's refreshing to know. Even though they may disagree with you politically, they're smart enough not to get involved in that in the public eye because they know it divides their audience and turns potentially half or more of their audience off to the projects they're in and probably will keep them from spending money on their projects. Just full disclosure, that's me. That's me with certain actors. And you know what's crazy is the guy's name just went flying right out of my head because I was thinking of, oh, Tom Cruise. Yeah, that's me with Tom Cruise. I will not pay a dime to see a movie starring Tom Cruise. And the reason I won't is not because of politics, but it's because he is a tool for the Scientologists. And he's being used willfully by the Church of Scientology to be a spokesperson for them. And there's so much evidence, so much proof that Scientology has done so much damage to so many people and destroyed so many families that as long as Tom Cruise is involved in Scientology and speaking out for them, neither he nor the studio he works for at any given time will get a dime from me or my family. It just won't happen. That just won't happen. Now, if one of his movies happens to come on TV in my cable package, I may watch it, but I'm not going to the theater. He will not sell tickets to me. And that's just how I see it. But it's refreshing to know, as I said, that there are some living in the Hollywood bubble who actually have a little bit of wisdom about how they handle things. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again, and that is, I think most of them don't actually understand what they're advocating. I think because they are in the bubble and they're in the echo chamber, they're just repeating what they hear. And in some cases, as in with climate change, and the existential threat of climate change, I think they're on board with the climate change message because they've been told it's a good cause to be involved with. Hey, you need to jump on this. You need to be an advocate. You need to be involved. Because it's about saving the planet, and you need to tie yourself to the saving the planet because it's a good thing, and it paints you in a positive light. I think their handlers, their management, people like that, are telling them to get involved, and they have no idea what they're talking about. They're completely clueless. And as a result, they're out there talking about this existential threat, and they know nothing about what they're talking about, except for what's been handed to them on prep sheets to get them ready for their public appearances. So I think listening to somebody who pretends to be other people for a living is not exactly wise, because they really don't know what's going on, and they really shouldn't be speaking out about what they don't know about, but they do. And those who give them any weight, who give them any credence, who assign any value to what they say, those people, wow, you should watch yourself around them, that's for sure. Woo-hoo! More after the break as the Daily Perspective continues. Merry Christmas. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Kind of a mariachi version. The 12 days of Christmas. Which reminded me, did you happen to catch any of the Miss Universe pageant? Steve Harvey was the MC. He has been for a long time. I don't know if you caught it or not. What was with the jacket that guy's wearing? It's a tuxedo, okay? It's a tuxedo. It's all formal. Go look it up. Or go look at the Daily Perspective Facebook page and scroll down just a little bit, and you'll see the picture. Because I put it up there, and I asked the question, when did he become a mariachi? I mean, bless his heart. Anyway, it is a wet and chilly day in our neighborhood. Hopefully things are good where you are. Right now, even as we speak, as the podcast is being recorded and we're on Facebook Live, House Democrats are announcing articles of impeachment against President Trump focused on abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Of course, they are interpreting what no one has been able to prove as abuse of power. They are interpreting what actually no one has testified accurately could be abuse of power. As I said yesterday, they've talked about quid pro quo or bribery. But as I explained this on Friday and then talked about it again yesterday, if quid pro quo is involved and bribery is involved, then excuse me, both parties involved have to know what's happening. If I say to you, if you will do this for me, then I will do this for you. That is quid pro quo. Something I do for you gets something for me, or something you do for me gets something for you. That's quid pro quo. Bribery is saying, if you don't do this for me, then I'm not giving you this. Or if you don't do this, then I'm telling everybody about something you did. That's bribery. Or, hey, I'll do this for you. I'll give you this money if you'll do this for me. Or if I'll give you this money if you don't do what you're planning on doing. So when the president is talking with the new president of another country, and he says, please do us a favor and look into this potential corruption, because this president ran, this new president of this other country ran a campaign based on cleaning up the corruption in his country. When our president says, hey, I'd like you to look into this potential corruption for us, the United States of America, that's asking for a favor. Had he said, I'm not going to release military aid for you unless you do this, that would be quid pro quo. That never happened. Also, the party on the other side, this new president of Ukraine, had no idea that there was the potential for military aid to be withheld for any reason. None. He did not know. So when one party is uninformed about a potential issue, it cannot be quid pro quo. It cannot be bribery. As far as obstruction goes, obstruction only occurs when an investigation is legitimate. And this entire process has been illegitimate. And we'll look into that. We've got some audio that we'll listen to in just a few that talks about that. One of the things that goes to the illegitimacy is the fact that Adam Schiff made all of these allegations and all of these assertions and ran this clown show that we saw on television up until this past week or so. But yesterday, he would not appear to be asked to be asked questions about what he found, about his allegations. He conveniently had other obligations. So we're not getting a real investigation. We're not getting a real constitutional effort here by the Democrats. What we're getting is a railroading. It's a witch hunt. It is an effort to demean the president so that he cannot win an election. That's what's going on here. And it's, I got to tell you, it's ugly, but it's also backfiring. The Inspector General report, when it first came out yesterday, what we were hearing from all the sources was that the IG report showed some errors, but there was no evidence of bias by the FBI in the Trump campaign investigation. But as the hours rolled by yesterday, people were able to actually examine the report, to look into these 17 basic and fundamental errors and omissions in the original application to FISA and all the subsequent renewals to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And they, even though at the time, at the beginning, those errors made the case appear stronger than it was, that, according to Horowitz, had this been done by a Republican administration prior to a Democrat win, then there would be people in prison already. Because the reality is that this was all orchestrated and it all had a central purpose. The Obama administration was trying to keep the Trump campaign from winning the election. The Obama administration was behind the scenes trying to illegitimately push Hillary Clinton into office. And more people have looked into that, and they have seen that that is exactly the case. In fact, Attorney General Bill Barr, yesterday afternoon, once people had had enough time to digest everything, issued a translation of the DOJ IG report. And here's what he had to say. This is coming from PJ Media by Victoria Taft. The Department of Justice Inspector General's IG report into the FBI lying to the FISA court to get warrants to spy on the Trump campaign is 433 pages. It took Attorney General Bill Barr one paragraph to translate what all of it means in the real world. And don't pick it up because you might burn yourself. Quote, the Inspector General's report now makes it clear that the FBI launched an intrusive investigation into a U.S. presidential campaign on the thinnest of suspicions that, in my view, were insufficient to justify the steps taken. It is also clear that from its inception, the evidence produced by the investigation was consistently exculpatory. Nevertheless, the investigation and surveillance was pushed forward for the duration of the campaign and deep into President Trump's administration. In the rush to obtain and maintain FISA surveillance of Trump campaign associates, FBI officials misled the FISA court, omitted critical exculpatory facts from their filings, and suppressed or ignored information negating the reliability of their principal source. The malfeasance and misfeasance detailed in the Inspector General's report reflects a clear abuse of the FISA process. Because the IG has no right to subpoena and can't lock anyone up, he can only refer people for prosecution. Currently, most of the people who conducted the abuse have already been fired or were out and were out of the purview of the inspector general. So the inspector general couldn't subpoena or lock any of them up. The IG report, however, found that officials lied and omitted helpful information to Trump campaign officials who were being spied on, but couldn't determine if the malfeasance was politically motivated. U.S. Attorney John Durham is looking into why the Trump spying case was hatched by people clearly pulling for Hillary Clinton to win the election. By the way, John Durham has been described as a bulldog. He is a guy who has past successes and has a record of getting real results and getting down to the facts. He also issued an extraordinary statement yesterday. He said, based on the evidence collected to date and while our investigation is ongoing, last month we advised the Inspector General that we do not agree with some of the report's conclusions as to predication and how the FBI case was opened. In other words, he's been looking deeply into this stuff, into places they didn't, and he disagrees about the motivation. The Durham investigation may be the final word on the Obama administration spying scandal into the campaign of a political rival. The Durham investigation and the IG report releases are the chief reasons why the Democrats have rushed the impeachment hearings to get ahead of this damning news of Democrat political chicanery and potential lawbreaking in the 2016 election. And it's only going to get even juicier. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. We three kings of Orient, and Merry Christmas. It's Tuesday, December 10th, 2019. Counting down to Christmas Day. And speaking of counting down to Christmas Day, were you one of those who jumped on board with the Christmas Perspective, which is, by the way, now a podcast? Look up the Christmas Perspective. You can go to ChristmasPerspective.com. It's the word Christmas and then the word perspective. It's all run together. ChristmasPerspective.com. I know it's a weird name. I explain it. If you listen to the whole series of in the podcast, the very last one, I explain that. Anyway, every day from the beginning of December through Christmas, through Christmas Eve, my brain is thinking about four things at once. Through Christmas Eve, you get a chapter from the book of Luke. It starts with a Christmas story and works all the way through the life of Jesus, all the way through the crucifixion to the resurrection. And as a result, when you get up Christmas morning, you have just heard the entire story, not just the beginning of the story that we're accustomed to from watching Linus drop his security blanket in the center of the stage so Charlie Brown can understand what Christmas is really all about. You get the rest of it. And it gives you a different perspective on the day. So get involved. We're 10 days in. But the episodes are 5 to 7 minutes long. So in less than an hour, you can get caught up. And then each day, a little 5-minute dose. So get involved today. Listen. And I'm seeing little nuggets come back because I get reports when people listen and when they share, and especially on Facebook, because there's also a Facebook group. You can go look for the Christmas Perspective. There's a Facebook group there, and you can follow it there as well. But I get notifications when people like or share, and I get to see when people download the podcast and the like, and they're sharing it with their friends and they're listening, and that's great. And that's the whole purpose. So give it a listen, get involved, and listen through the whole story. So Christmas morning, you'll wake up with a refreshed idea about what the day is really all about. And you can do that, as I said, by going to ChristmasPerspective.com or searching for the Facebook group, Christmas, The Christmas Perspective, and do that today. And by the way, if you listen to that podcast or this podcast, and there is an option for rating, please give it some thumbs up and some stars and the like on whatever. On iTunes, I believe you can give it stars. And leave a review. Just leave a little note. What'd you think? I'd appreciate that a lot. Okay, moving forward. Well, so much. Oh, real quick, in other news that's not all of this serious yuh, it's going on, Fox News has finally replaced Shepard Smith. They're moving Bill Hemmer, who's been a host in the morning block at Fox News. He's going to be going into the afternoons with Bill Hemmer Reports. Jay Wallace is the Fox News media president and executive editor. He said, Bill is an incredible newsman, and his ability to cut to the heart of the story while humanizing major events has made him a standout talent in news. As we start gearing up for the 2020 election, we're thrilled to have him lead our news division through what will be sure to be an eventful year. And he said, Bill Hemmer said, as a journalist, I'm extremely grateful for this opportunity. 2020 will undoubtedly be a year of great significance. Leading our breaking news division with the signature hour has enormous value to me personally and to our audience. We've got a fantastic team here, and I'm excited to get to work. And apparently, everybody, his coworkers, everybody that works around him and knows him well, they're all just thrilled to death that he's gotten this opportunity, and they all just love him. They're just Bill Hemmer apparently is one of these people that everybody in the office, nobody can find anything bad to say about the guy. They just all like him a lot. A lot of integrity, just a good person. And it's good to see that happening in that afternoon slot on Fox News. Speaking of Fox News, Brit Hume, he's an analyst for Fox News. He ripped into the FBI after the Horowitz IG report dropped. He said, you have to look at the particulars, the 17 instances of misconduct cited in this report. They're pretty damning. The FISA court was clearly taken for a ride by the FBI on this. And rather than me just reading what he had to say, why don't you listen to it yourself?
You've seen this report. Your take initially on what you take from it.
Well, you got to look at the particulars, the 17 instances of misconduct cited in the report. They are pretty damning. And, you know, this was not, there was, the FISA court was clearly taken for a ride by the FBI on this. And, you know, this was not a failure at some low level of the FBI where a few things were, you know, not properly done and so forth. This was up and down the chain of command. And it's about as strong medicine as I've seen in a report of this kind in a very long time. The FBI has had some dark days in its past, but nothing like this recently. This is pretty strong stuff. And you know, whether the conclusions that the Inspector General drew about whether the investigation, just the start of the investigation, was properly predicated or not, whether he's right about that, saying that it was, and whether there was political bias or not aside, this was very serious misconduct on the part of the FBI.
Yeah, Britt, President Trump did not hold back today. Take a listen.
They got caught. They got caught red-handed. It's an incredible thing that happened, and we're lucky we caught them. I think I'm going to put this down as one of our great achievements, because what we found and what we saw, never, ever should this happen again in our country.
But what was striking today, it was the Attorney General's statement initially, and then the statement from John Durham, the U.S. prosecutor, who's in the process of doing his own investigation. That was striking.
Mm. And I shared that with you earlier. So Brit Hume sees through the fog. And it's interesting that it's interesting that we're hearing from the mainstream press that this exonerates the FBI. Actually, James Comey tweeted yesterday. So all that stuff that the GOP's been talking about, everything, it was all smoke and mirrors and lies. Well, he obviously clearly did not read the report, or he read it using the same the same filters that the leftist press has. But the bottom line is that there was some funny business going on. There has been deep corruption. And that's one of the reasons Comey's no longer involved with the FBI, is that he was a liar and a manipulator. And he was working for the deep state, for the Democrats and the Republicans who didn't want Trump in office. Ah, man, oh, man, oh, man. I'm looking here to see. I know I've got a couple of other pieces of audio, and I'm trying to make sure I get things tied together properly for that. First up, the House Judiciary Committee received the impeachment inquiry's official findings during an unruly hearing yesterday. Lawyers from both parties sparred in blunt terms over whether President Trump indeed abused his power in dealings with the Ukraine. While committee members clashed repeatedly over a process Republicans decried as a rubber stamp, the hearing, which consisted of lawyers for both parties essentially making their closing arguments, including by showing video clips of key statements from witnesses, Trump and others, comes as the committee is expected to vote in the coming days on articles of impeachment against Trump. By the way, we covered this yesterday very briefly, but some of the video that the Democrats used of Trump has been deceptively edited. Oddly enough, that is also the claim they make whenever conservatives come out with video, like Project Veritas. But in this case, it actually was deceptively edited. The hearing was punctuated by partisan infighting and clashes over everything from parliamentary procedures to who should be on the witness stand. In one of the more contentious moments of the day, Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida, the Republican, upbraided Democratic Intelligence Counsel Dan Goldman on Monday to demand that the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff take the stand to testify. He said to Goldman, "We want Schiff in the chair, not you." Gaetz's pronouncement, which interrupted the questioning by the ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee, Doug Collins of Georgia, drew strong condemnation from House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler, Democrat of New York, who woke up and warned the Florida lawmaker that interruptions would not be tolerated. In case you haven't been watching, Mr. Nadler's been having a lot of trouble staying awake. Gaetz, however, seemed unfazed by the reprimand and later in the afternoon went after Goldman and Barry Burke, the counsel for Judiciary Committee Democrats, for donating to Democratic campaigns and criticizing President Trump. Quote, "So you gave tens of thousands, and Mr. Burke gave more than 100,000, Gaetz said to Goldman. "Do you think if you gave more money, you might be able to ask questions and answer them like Mr. Burke did?" The day started out with Burke explicitly alleging that Trump tied military aid to investigations he wanted Ukraine to carry out for his personal political benefit. He said, "The evidence is overwhelming that the president abused his power." Mm-hmm. Burke showed various video clips of testimony from prior witnesses, including from Ukraine top diplomat Bill Taylor and former National Security Council official Fiona Hill, as well as clips of comments made by Trump. Let me remind you at this point that these people, Bill Taylor, Fiona Hill, neither one of them or any of the rest, there have been 15 witnesses called so far. Only one of those 15 witnesses has ever spoken with President Trump about anything. And that one asked him point blank, "What do you want out of this?" And President Trump said, "I don't want anything. No quid pro quo. I just want the president of Ukraine to do what he campaigned on." And that was cleaning his swamp up, draining his swamp. So the only person in this entire lineup of witnesses who has actually had any interaction with the president regarding this particular issue, the central issue they're trying to make this all about, said in his own words, the president wanted nothing. That's what the president said. Only one out of 15 of these witnesses. This is something that's important to remember at this point, because they're trying to make the case that the president has broken the law. It's shaky at best. But as usual, Democrats, progressives, keep telling the same lie again and again and again. And by repeating the lie, they hope to establish in the minds of those who are watching and listening that somehow it's got to be true. And this is just how they've always operated throughout history. You look at them and that's exactly what they do time and time again. More after the break when the Daily Perspective continues. Merry Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
And welcome back to the Daily Perspective. good to have you along today. Wow, we're just so close. 15 days, 14 days until the day itself, actually. 2 weeks. 2 weeks away. 2 weeks from tomorrow, Christmas Day. And then a week after that, New Year's Day. A lot of people taking some breaks, school kids out of school, people taking vacation time. Walt Disney World covered up with people. You can't stir them with a stick this time of year down there. It is a wet and colder day in the neighborhood for us here. I don't know what it's like where you are, but hopefully you're having a good day. Speaking of the Christmas holidays, I'm looking at the calendar about the podcast and taking a break, just taking a quick break over the holidays. And I'll let you know more about that in the next couple of days, because honestly, I've just been thinking about it. I've looked at the calendar a couple of times, trying to think come up with the best way to make it happen, because the holidays fall right in the middle of the week. They're both on a Wednesday. And, so I'm looking at how to make that fall together in the right place. So I'll let you know probably before the end of this week exactly how that pans out. I've just been kind of busy the last couple of days and haven't had a time to really sit down and just make a decision about it, because my brain's not that, I just can't do that many things at once. It's a it is a Tuesday edition of the podcast. We were talking about quid pro quo. I was talking about that a little while ago, and I just wanted to, I wanted to touch base on that because Doug Collins, representative from Georgia, the Republican, spent some time grilling Daniel Goldman, who's a Democratic counsel, about quid pro quo and about where quid pro quo actually could be found. It's a little less than 2 minutes long, but I think it's worth listening to.
Biden has no specific corporate governance expertise, and we don't believe he speaks Ukrainian or Russian. We don't believe he moved there. So he's getting this gigantic paycheck for what? The Washington Post wrote at the time of Biden's appointment to Burisma's board that it looked nepotistic at best, and the Washington Post said, nefarious at worst. According to the Wall Street Journal, anti-corruption activists in Ukraine also raised concerns that the former VP's son received money from Zochevsky and worried that that would mean Zochevsky would be protected and not prosecuted. Witnesses in the impeachment inquiry noted Hunter Biden's role on the board and how it presented at minimum a conflict of interest. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman testified that Hunter Biden did not appear qualified to serve on Burisma's board. Witnesses testified that Hunter Biden's role on the board was a legitimate concern to raise. In fact, George Kent explained that in 2015, he raised a concern to the office of former Vice President Biden that Hunter Biden's role on Burisma's board presented a potential conflict of interest. However, Hunter Biden's role did not change, and former Vice President Biden continued to lead U.S. policy in Ukraine. On this record, there is a legitimate basis for President Trump to have concern about Hunter Biden's role on Burisma's board.
I identified that wrong. That was GOP counsel Stephen Castor talking about the impeachment report. But it's absolutely true. He is talking about the legitimate basis for President Trump to have concern about Hunter Biden's role on Burisma's board. There was funny business going on. There was quid pro quo involved. There was concern. And now there's Doug Collins from Georgia.
As I remember going over to the Ukraine, convincing our team, our leaders, convincing them that we should provide for loan guarantees. I went over, I guess, the 12th or 13th time to Kiev. I was supposed to announce that there was a $1 billion loan guarantee. And I got a commitment from Poroshenko and they said that I would take action against, that they would take action against the state prosecutor.
And by the way, he's talking about Joe Biden. He's quoting Joe Biden.
So they said they were walking out of the press conference. I said, nah, I'm not going to, or we're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have authority, and you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said, I said, call him. Laughter. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting the $1 billion. I said, you're not getting the $1 billion. I'm getting ready to be leaving here in, I think, about 6 hours. I looked at them and said, I'm leaving here in 6 hours. If the prosecutor is not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch, he got fired. Did he ask for something, request something, and hold something of value?
He did. George Kent testified that that
was... I think I'll do what you did. George Kent testified this. I'm asking about not George Kent. I'm asking about this question.
Right, but it's important context.
It's not. Answer this question. Did he or did he not? Either Joe Biden's a liar telling a story to make people impressed, or he actually did this. Which is it?
He did it pursuant to U.S. official policy.
So he did it in holding, withholding actual dollars, actual thing, holding this out there. So Joe Biden, of everybody that we discussed about, is the only one that's done a quid pro quo. He's the only one that's used taxpayer dollars to actually threaten a foreign government. And yet we're sitting here pretending that this is not happening. We're sitting here pretending that a president of the United States now would not be concerned. Look, you look at it this way. Joe Biden's a terrible candidate. He can destroy himself on the campaign trail, but he can't get by this. And it doesn't matter who brings it up. It doesn't matter who does it, because this is what happened. And you can whitewash it all you want. You can go over whatever you want, but that's what he did. He's either a liar or he did it, and he did it.
And that was Doug Collins of Georgia. And he went on in that particular, in that setting, in his time, he went on and talked about what happened with the phone calls, with the phone records accessed by Adam Schiff, and the illegality of that, how it was done, who did it. And he, I would be completely surprised if the counsel for the Democrats didn't have to go get some burn medication after that, because he really, really scorched the man. He was taking no prisoners. He was taking no funny business. He refused to allow him to equivocate. It was dynamic and well worth watching. And check out the show notes for the links. They'll be in the show notes today. One more thing before we move along. We got about 4 minutes left, and I want to see if I can touch on this real quick. The Supreme Court has opted to leave in place a pro-life Kentucky law that requires women seeking abortion to see an ultrasound of their unborn children before making the decision to abort. In a lengthy list of court orders put out Monday morning, the Supreme Court declined to take up the case of EMW Women's Surgical Center versus Meyer, a challenge to a Kentucky law that requires women seeking an abortion to be shown an ultrasound of their unborn children before making the final decision. Earlier this year, the law was upheld by a ruling of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Opponents of the law, such as the American Civil Liberties Union of Kentucky, argue that by compelling abortionists to show women ultrasounds of their children, the law violates the free speech rights of abortion providers. Wow, that's a bizarre stretch. The appeals court, however, found the statute's ultrasound requirements to be within the parameters of the First Amendment as it applies to speech required in professional settings. Quote, we hold that the law provides relevant information, the Sixth Circuit opinion reads. It goes on to say the information conveyed by an ultrasound image, its description, and the audible beating fetal heart gives a patient greater knowledge of the unborn life inside her. This also inherently provides the patient with more knowledge about the effect of an abortion procedure. It shows her what or whom she is consenting to terminate. That this information might persuade a woman to change her mind does not render it suspect under the First Amendment. It just means that it is pertinent to her decision-making. The Supreme Court provided no accompanying explanation for its decision to deny the petition to hear the case. The ultrasound-informed consent law is just one of the bluegrass state's pro-life statutes to be challenged in federal court lately. Earlier this year, Republican Governor Matt Bevin signed into law a bill that would make it illegal to perform an abortion after an unborn child's heartbeat is detectable. It was blocked by a federal judge shortly after signature in March. Now, more information is always better when you're making a decision. More information is better than less. But abortion proponents don't want potential abortion customers to have more information. Because knowing the truth about what they're considering could cause them to decide against abortion. Life News says that 78% of women choose to keep their baby after seeing an abortion. Liberal sources deny the statistic. When you actually, if you do a search today, do that. I give you a little homework. Do a search today about how seeing an ultrasound changes abortion decisions. You will notice that almost all of the references come from progressive, liberal, leftist sources. Almost all of them. Former abortion industry workers reveal that ultrasound use is common, but customers are rarely allowed to see the abortion, the ultrasound. They're rarely allowed to see it. And the reason is the abortion providers don't want them to change their minds. There are medical reasons for doing the ultrasounds, but the customers, and I just won't refer to them as patients, their customers are not allowed to see the ultrasound because they may change their mind. Just go look up Abby Johnson and see what she has to say. She's a former Planned Parenthood clinic director, and she'll tell you the truth about ultrasounds and the impact they make. Interesting case, interesting news. And that's the way we close it out today. God bless you. Have a good one, and we'll see you here tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.